Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Tuesday, August the 9th. Welcome to Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. In the next 25 minutes, Chad's President Idriss Deby is running for a fifth term in office. Opposition parties are calling his re-election a political hold-up.
Deby, ni legal, ni légitime.
Deby's election victory was neither legal nor legitimate. We will announce the counter-government when we think the time is right.
Zambia goes to the polls on Thursday to elect a new president and parliament. Alongside the elections is a referendum on amendments to the Bill of Rights.
This so-called referendum is a mockery to the Zambian people because most Zambians haven't been taught what they are going to vote for.
I must say a few understand those who are in cities, but those in the rural areas, it's very difficult to have access to this Bill of Rights or the content that is in the Bill of Rights and be able to understand what they're voting for.
And Kenya's team competing at the Rio Olympics sent the track and field manager home after fresh allegations of bribery. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Chad's President Idriss Deby took the oath of office for a fifth term on Monday, despite strong opposition to his re-election. Opposition groups have described Deby's fifth term as a political hold-up. Activists who took to the streets, violating a ban on demonstrations, were met by heavily armed security forces that used tear gas and water cannons to disperse the protests. Several African heads of state attended the swearing-in ceremony, including Rwanda's President Paul Kagame, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari, and Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir. A former commander of the Chadian army, Deby's 26-year rule is described as autocratic at home, but in the region, he is respected for his commitment to the fight against the Nigerian terror group Boko Haram. This report by Philip Zanna is presented by Sarah Stephen.
It's not just Idriss Deby's leadership style that Chadians are increasingly irritated about. It's also his extravagant spending. He ordered the construction of a new luxury hotel for a swearing-in ceremony in a country where prisons are overcrowded and civil servants have to wait months to get paid. Hopes of reform have been dashed, analysts say. And demonstrations in Chad calling for Deby's resignation have become louder. Six former candidates who failed to unseat him at the last presidential elections are even planning to proclaim a separate government. Saleh Kipzabo is one of them.
Deby, ni legal, ni légitime.
Deby's election victory was neither legal nor legitimate. We will announce the counter-government when we think the time is right.
Since Deby's re-election, freedom of expression has declined even further. Access to social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter is now blocked.
Journalists can't do stories and businesses can't communicate with their customers, many of whom are in different parts of the world.
Says Julie Ovono, who heads the Africa department at the NGO Internet Without Borders. The Chadian government says technical problems are to blame, but communications expert Kamala Fagnon refutes that claim.
The government ordered telecommunications operators to restrict access to social media back in January. It is technically feasible, and similar clampdowns have been imposed during elections in other African countries. But this has now been going on quite a while.
One journalist who asked not to be identified said that due to unkept promises, many Chadians have lost trust in the government.
We don't have any free weekends or days off anymore. Staff was promised better working conditions in 2011, but nothing has changed in the meantime.
That report was compiled by Philip Zanna. Idriss Deby is one of Central Africa's longest serving leaders, along with the likes of Paul Biya, who has ruled Cameroon for close to 34 years, Obiang Nguema of Equatorial Guinea, who has extended his 37-year rule, and Denis Sassou Nguesso of Congo-Brazzaville, now serving his third 7-year mandate. What makes Central African leaders stay in power too long? Moki Kinseka finds out from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Idriss Déby and his party, the Patriotic Salvation Movement, MPS, came to power after ousting then-president Hissène Habré in a 1990 coup. Déby, an ex-army commander, changed the constitution in 2004, eliminating its two-term limit on presidential tenure so he could run for office again. He is just one of Central Africa's longest-serving leaders. Sociologist Charles Atangana of the University of Yaoundé 1 says Central Africa has remained one of the poorest and most undemocratic sub-regions in the world because its leaders are only interested in clinging to power.
They do not want to leave power. They want to be there for eternity. And even when they do leave, they are being replaced by their children. The result is that we are stuck while others are developing. Central African countries are leading with long-serving leaders. We have Cameroon at the head, Chad, Congo, and Equatorial Guinea. Out of six Central African states, we have four in that situation.
Political analyst Professor Ngole Ngole, who also serves as a close aide to Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, agrees some of the leaders do not want to leave office.
Well, generally speaking, it's human nature. We are all political animals. When you are in power, naturally, it's normal psychologically that you'll want to keep it. But what determines how short or how long is not your wish, no matter what you wish. Is the political system, does it permit that? Is the culture, does it permit that? Are the laws, does it permit that? And so forth and so on.
Ngole Ngole adds that some of the leaders have, however, won the hearts and admiration of their people, so some might want them to stay on for another term. Severin Alega, lecturer at the Faculty of Law at the University of Yaoundé 2, says the leaders also benefit from strong military and a weak organization of opposition political parties that most of the time are bought over by rich members of the ruling government.
There's a trend that new political parties in Chad and in Cameroon are invaded by members of the ruling parties after a few weeks or months. They then try to manipulate leaders of the new parties to give up on their main original goal, which was to take over power.
He said at times the new party leaders are bought with money and or are lured with posts in the government. At times, the government also creates parties to give an impression there is democracy, he added. 70% of the population of Central African states is made up of youths between 16 and 35 years, meaning that they have relatively young populations who have known only a leader in their respective countries. They have always been promised a change, as Déby did during his inauguration, a change youths say is taking too long to come.
Moki Kinseka reporting, and this is Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo. Still to come, how a young man in Gabon developed software to improve standards in hospitals.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Zambians are heading to the polls on Thursday to choose their next president and members of parliament. Alongside the presidential and parliamentary elections, they will also be voting in a referendum to decide on whether to include rights currently not guaranteed in the constitution. Many voters may by now have a clear idea on who to vote for, but not everyone really understands what the referendum is all about. Africa Link's Crispin Wakidio is currently in Zambia and has been speaking to some residents in the capital, Lusaka.
The moment I left the Lusaka International Airport, it became obvious that the nation is gearing up for elections. Billboards, banners and posters, mostly of incumbent President Edgar Lungu and his main challenger Hakainde Hichilema, line up the Great East Road, which leads to the capital's central business district. Interestingly, almost none of the posters are about the referendum where Zambians will vote on whether to include environmental, socio-economic and media rights currently not guaranteed in the current constitution. Critics and legal experts have warned that the Zambian referendum is being rushed and that there was need for more sensitization and awareness raising and voter education. To find out how much the ordinary Zambian knows about the referendum and the Bill of Rights, I asked a few residents in the capital, Lusaka.
I'm Kangwa Clotilda.
Kangwa, what do you know about the referendum that is happening on Thursday?
Honestly, I'm very ignorant about that. I don't know anything.
My name is Belinda Sandra. Anyway, I've only a brief idea about what the referendum is all about. It's about choosing the Bill of Rights. I should think so. According to what I read from the booklet that they were ushering out, I feel they haven't given people enough time. They needed serious sensitization because they've been telling each other to say, when you see a referendum, please just ignore it and just go on voting on the president you want.
My name is Bruce Kaumba. What I know about the referendum is that we'll be voting for us whether to include that's a Bill of Rights in our constitution. So, and also to repeal Article 79 in our constitution.
Do you think the people have been given enough time to understand what this Bill of Rights and the referendum is all about?
I must say a few understand. Those who are in cities, the cities of Zambia, understand, like Lusaka, may understand because they read, and they're able to get the information from various media houses, and they are, because they're accessible. But those in the rural areas, it's very difficult to be able to understand what they're voting for. They are basically going to vote because they're supporting a particular party. So, for example, those who are supporting PF, and PF is saying yes, and they're basically going to vote yes because PF is saying yes. And those who are supporting UPND, they are basically going to vote no because UPND is saying no. So basically, this whole thing has been politicized because it's been a short period of time. They needed to take some time for people to be educated, to understand the content in the Bill of Rights and understand why they're saying yes and why they're saying no.
The Zambian government has defended its decision to squeeze in the referendum with the general elections by arguing that it would significantly cut down the costs. According to the Zambian Electoral Commission, nearly 7 million voters will be casting their votes. One thing is clear, Zambians will be doing a lot of voting come Thursday.
Africa Link's Crispin Wakidiu reporting from Lusaka. Still to come on the program, music as a therapy for mentally ill people in Ghana. Up next, a young man's initiative that's improving standards in hospitals in Gabon.
Africa on the move.
When 38-year-old Fabrice Younawa couldn't find a job in Gabon despite a doctorate degree from a French university, he stopped looking elsewhere for employment. The biotech expert started his own business and developed a software that could significantly improve data storage and communication in Gabon's hospitals. This report by Jan-Philip Scholz is presented by Christina Kripal.
Fabrice Younawa's program stores all of a patient's medical history. Once you enter the data, it stores the information centrally so that all doctors and nurses can access it. It is an important step forward for the Gabonese health sector because proper documentation and communication still remains one of its biggest problems. Now, everything Dr. Arthur Kanganga needs to know about his patients is on the tablet he takes with him on his hospital rounds.
If there are complications, we can quickly get to the bottom of the problem, since we do not have to sift through countless documents about the medical history. Thus, we can also take better care of the patient.
Dr. Kanganga's clinic is one of the first in Gabon to have digitalized its entire communication. All the blood tests, prescriptions, and all the appointments are digitally registered. Just a few files are now left in the shelves that used to store patient records in paper. Younawa, the man behind the new software, explains to the clinic's administrator that the information can be accessed from anywhere within the hospital. The program was built to incorporate the hospital's needs, says the IT specialist.
In Africa, we do not have internet in every hospital. Perhaps it is available in every second or third hospital. So a solution had to be found to work without the internet.
pour pouvoir travailler.
192-168-11.
Within the clinic, everything runs through an internal network. However, an internet connection is required to share information with other clinics. Yonawa and his team of 12 have worked on the software for more than 5 years, and the developers have to keep updating it to meet new requirements. Developing Yonawa's software costs the equivalent of 1,500 euro. Fabrice's home country, Gabun, is a relatively rich African country, yet one-third of the population lives in poverty. This is one reason why Fabrice returned home after completing his computer science studies in France. He wanted to make a difference. But he admits that he has run into some difficulties with his people's mindset. But perseverance trumps strength, says Yonawa, quoting a local proverb. The number of Gabonese hospitals that want to go digital is steadily increasing. Meanwhile, the developer is already working on new projects. A lot still needs to be done to help Gabun into the digital age.
And that report was by Jan-Philip Schultz. Now, Kenya's team participating at the Rio Olympics is in hot water after fresh allegations that Michael Rotich, the tracks and field manager, requested money to let undercover journalists who were posing as athletic representatives know when drug testers were coming. Rotich, who denied the allegations, has been sent home, while Kenya's anti-doping agency said it would look into the evidence. But Kenya's sports minister has questioned why the allegations, which stem from secret recordings earlier this year, were only published just before the opening of the Olympic Games. Wanjiku Mwaura has more.
The report published in the British newspaper The Sunday Times under German broadcaster ARD alleged that Kenya's track and field manager Michael Rotich solicited bribes to the tune of $13,000 or 1,325,180 Kenyan shillings. Rotich offered undercover reporters posing as athletic representatives to send early warning when drug testers from the World Anti-Doping Agency were going to visit. The report, which was investigated between January and February this year at a training camp in Iten in Kenya's Rift Valley, was released over the weekend ahead of the beginning of the Rio Olympic athletic events. This received strong reactions, as Kenyan sports journalist Barotha Kirui points out.
Guys feel like there is a vendetta being pushed against Kenya, given that it's just a week before we get to the Olympics proper, because the athletics calendar starts on the 12th. So then secondly, was Major Rotich, was it entrapment, or as he says himself, was he trying to also get to the bottom of the cartels?
In the video recording released by the German broadcaster ARD, Rotich is seen telling the investigators that he could easily get the dates for the drug tests and pass on the information to the undercover journalist. But Kirui thinks this was a mere attempt to smear Kenya's image.
Kenya has been vilified. The people who follow athletics know that the athletes are tested a lot. I had a chat with Rayton Okwiri, Kenyan boxers in Rio. Since he's been in Rio for a week, he's been tested 3 times. And they just show up in his hotel room. The testing is a lot, but it still feels like no matter what the government does, the cloud of doping seems not to be able to be shaken.
This fresh bribery allegation is not the only challenge facing Team Kenya. On Sunday, world javelin champion Julius Yego found himself stranded at the airport in Nairobi. He was supposed to travel with that batch of the Kenyan athletic team, but was shocked to find out that the National Olympic Committee of Kenya had not reserved a flight ticket for him. On Twitter, Yego wrote, in quotes, "that I don't have a ticket to Rio Olympic 2016. I'm lost as to what is going on." Yego was not the only team member that had trouble flying to Brazil. World 1500-meter silver medalist Elijah Manangoi and two-time world marathon champion Catherine Dereba also failed to get their tickets. Kenya's reputation has been tarnished by more than 40 doping cases in the past 4 years. At some point, its participation at the Rio Olympics was seen to be in jeopardy. Sports Minister Hassan Wario said the East African nation would review the evidence but was suspicious about the timing of the report. He believed it may have been designed to discredit Kenyan runners.
Wanjiku Mwaura reporting. And coming up next, music as a therapy for mentally ill people in Ghana.
Making a difference.
Mohamed Alidu is a Ghanaian music therapist in his own right. He stages live performances in hospitals with healing music coined from folktales to match local rhythms. He does music for people believed to be suffering from depression and other psychiatric problems. With his music background, Alidu started a school in Tamale, training children to use traditional music to promote peace. But his main challenge is religion, as Maxwell Sook finds out.
Hanan Abdulhalik struck his males on wooden bars fit together to form the xylophone. He's running a test show for a small audience outside the Bizung School of Music near Nori Village, Tamale. This Asian song by the music student seeks to reinforce young girls' self-confidence when dealing with boys. Mohamed Alidu, a music therapist, founded the Bizung School of Music. He and his team believe that a certain kind of music can heal the soul.
We need to realize that there's a certain moment when we feel like we're left by, we're left alone, we don't have anybody to listen to us. Play music because there's people that are connecting with you in spirit.
Alidu is currently touring the country with his healing rhythms, performing live for persons with psychological problems.
We did it in Accra, and also we do it in Kumasi, one of the hospitals, and, you know, it was very great. You know, and there's some other place in around Ashama that is a blind kids school, and they also get involved with the music, and it was very amazing to see.
Part of Alidu's goal is to develop musical talent in the north. The school he set up to train the children is free of charge. When I arrive, Frank Elonam, one of the music teachers, is giving a lesson to some students.
We are learning about the pentatonic scale in G major on the xylophone, because the xylophone is a G pentatonic scale instrument. So I'm just trying to let them know how to be familiar with the G major pentatonic scale on the xylophone. That's what we are learning today.
The northern region is predominantly Muslim community. Some families say Islam does not support such music and have withdrawn their children from the school. Islamic scholar Habib Hussein Baba in Tamale explains why he believes that the music is not allowed.
There are certain musicians, when they are singing, the message their music is carrying across always bring about immoral behaviors to the young ones. Therefore, those music are not actually accepted by Islam as a religion.
Initially, the school had more than 150 students, but at present, only a handful of children attend the school. Despite the religious difficulties, some of the students in the school told me they have defied their parents to pursue their interest.
Music is what I've wanted all my life, and I've had the opportunity to learn it here at Bizung School of Music. I'm so excited.
Because some time ago I had a little problem with my family members, but we've sorted that out. Yeah.
However, the concept of healing music seems to be doomed in the north. Hospitals have rejected proposals for live performance for people who are ill, according to the music therapist.
Maxwell Sook reporting from northern Ghana. And before we leave you, a quick recap of the main stories. Chad's President Idris Deby has taken the oath of office for a fifth time on Monday, despite strong opposition to his re-election. And Kenya's team competing at the Rio Olympics sent its track and field manager home after fresh allegations of bribery. That's all we had time for. If you have any comment, please send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or you can send us a letter to AfricaLink DW53110 Bonn, Germany, or also text message to +491609575910. And as always, thank you for listening. And until tomorrow, I am Abubakar Jallo in Bonn, Germany. Have a wonderful day.